All right. Again, thank you all for being here. We are in Mark chapter 15. We started talking about Pontius Pilate. Pilate is Jesus has gone to go see Pilate, and he was just in the place where he was being judged at the high priest's residence, there in Jerusalem, and he was judged by the high priest in chapter 14, and we see that toward the latter part of that chapter, and of course then Peter denies him three times, and now he has gone to Pontius Pilate, and we'll see why exactly, and all the situations that go on there. And so we're going to read. And now we already started talking about Pontius Pilate a bit last week, so I won't get into that too much. But let's see. But we are right here. We talked about Pontius Pilate, and let's see. We talked about him a little bit about going to Pilate and the fact that he was headed in that direction, why he was headed in that direction, and why Pilate even had to see him. We talked about that a little bit on last week. So right now we're going to go into who is Pilate. So let's go ahead and read these verses real quick so that we can have a better idea of what we're looking at here. So let us read Mark chapter 15, and we'll read the first five verses here. Immediately in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus, led him away, and delivered him to Pilate. Then Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered and said to them, "It is as you say." And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. Then Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you." But Jesus still answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. So who is this Pilate? He is a very prominent figure in this chapter, as we noted the other day. Let's see if I can pull that up real quick. We noted the other day he is backing up a little bit. There we go. He is a major name that we see in this particular chapter, as we see in this word cloud here. So, who is this person? Why is this such a prominent individual here? Well, let's look at exactly who Pilate is. We won't get into a full biography, obviously, but we'll say a few things. Well, of course, he was the Roman governor of Judea. The technical term that they used was a prefect, and he was the prefect of Judea from AD 26 to AD 36. And that is confirmed by other sources outside of the Bible. And so, further evidence that Pontius Pilate was involved here. Of course, we don't need further evidence, but it's helpful for many. He was a ruthless man. Luke records him slaughtering Jews on a particular feast day. We see that in Luke chapter 13 and verse 1. Where he mingled the blood of certain people with the sacrifices is the language that Jesus uses. And so we see that he indeed was ruthless in a lot of ways. In fact, he was recalled by Rome for such cruelty. And the reason he had slaughtered a group of Samaritans who were followers of a false Christ, someone who claimed to be a Christ, the Messiah, near Mount Gerizim, looking for artifacts. So these Samaritans were looking for artifacts from the time of Moses around Mount Gerizim, and Pilate just slaughtered them. So crucifying a Jewish man like Jesus would have been no big deal for him, except that it was. And we find that here in the passage, that in fact it was a big deal to Pilate. Why would we kill this innocent man, crucify this innocent man? And yet we see that it seems against, or it seems like it would be something that he wouldn't have any problem doing due to his ruthlessness, and yet we find that he does have a problem with it. And we see a couple reasons why that is. Paul was not ignorant as to why these Jewish leaders wanted Jesus dead. We see in a little bit later in verse 10, for he knew that the chief priest had handed him over because of envy. He didn't want to just kill anybody because they were popular and the people were envy, or the leaders anyway, were envious of that. Not to mention in Matthew 27 and verse 19, we read that his wife, Pontius, that Pilate's wife was having dreams about Jesus and pleaded with her husband not to have anything to do with him. And so we have all these things building up here that might lead this ruthless man to attempt at least to show some form of mercy. Of course, what we see here, the envy and all, is not a good reason to kill someone. So Pilate was doing what he could to keep from crucifying Jesus, amazingly enough. There was, however, a degree of cowardice here, since it was the Roman prefect's job to keep the peace. And so keeping the peace often, I mean, how many times have you kept the peace by not addressing something that you think that may need to be addressed, or something that might have bothered you? So we see that that Pilate was among those in this situation wanting to keep the peace and yet not confronting, or not going against what the other people were wanting. In his mind, keeping the peace meant crucifying an innocent man and letting a murderer, a thief, and an insurrectionist go free. And well, that's of course Barabbas, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. So that's who Pilate is. That's who Pilate is. So now let's consider the questioning before Pilate. There's some questioning that goes on here. So let's keep. No, actually, this is a good spot. All right. So, questioning before Pilate. So the Jewish leaders had, of course, levied their charges against Jesus, framing it in a way they thought would be the most likely to get Pilate to execute Jesus. We find in Luke 23, 2 that they accuse Jesus of perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And so, again, trying to frame it in such a way that would be more likely for Pilate to have him executed. Of course, the first two things were absolutely false accusations. Jesus specifically said to pay taxes to Caesar. Remember Mark chapter 12 and verse 17, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. But they were on a roll. These Jewish leaders were on a roll with their lies and their deceit. So why stop now? Why stop now? So Pilate asks him point blank, are you the king of the Jews? We find here, we find here in verse 2, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answers in the affirmative. It is as you say here in Mark chapter 15 and verse 2. In other passages and other versions, it's a good deal more explicit. I think in Matthew's account, if I remember correctly, he says, I am. And so that is an amazing thing. Or am I remembering something else? But in any event, He is saying that he it is as you say, it is true. He's affirming the fact that he is the Christ, or that rather that he is the King of Jews, let's put it that way. So John records, of course, what Jesus said about the nature of his kingdom. We find that in John 18:36, that it is not of this world, and that his followers have no cause to fight. And amazingly, this satisfies Pilate. I find no fault in this man. We see Luke chapter 23. Luke records that there in verses 4 and 5. But again, the chief priests continue to make baseless accusations against him. And they are desperate for something to stick. Pilate expects, of course, Jesus to defend himself. But does he defend himself? No. Most people in this situation would be begging for their life, would be saying, "No, it's not true. Please let me live. Don't listen to these people." That's what most people would do, would say. What we find here that Pilate, but that he's fulfilling what we see in Isaiah 53 and verse 7, that he was silent before his shearers, as a sheep is silent before his shearers. He went silently to this. He didn't question. He didn't complain. In fact, Mark records very few words that are recorded here. There are a few words here or there recorded, John especially, between him and Pilate. But generally speaking, he went silently. He didn't try to defend himself. And Pilate is amazed at Jesus's silence before his accusers. Jesus will answer Pilate's honest questions, as we see in the book of John, but he has but has no use for responding to the false accusations of the Jewish leaders. This further shows Pilate that Jesus is an innocent man. Nevertheless, Luke records that Pilate sends Jesus to see Herod Antipas, which I think Renee is mentioning here in verse 5 and 6. There is a gap where he appears before Herod. I could repeat. I did mention the verse where Pilate's wife dreamt about this, and that's Matthew 27:19. So that's up on the screen if you can see it. Matthew 20, it's under Who is Pilate, where there was the dream that Pilate's wife had. Matthew 27:19. And so I read ahead a little bit and saw that you were talking about Herod and said, "Well, I'll get to that. I know I will." So it's at this point that Pilate sends Jesus to Herod Antipas, who is the tetrarch of Galilee and Perea, and he's in town. He's in town because it's a Passover, and Jesus is under his jurisdiction because he's a Galilean. And we find that in Luke chapter 23, verses 6 through 12. And so we see that particular event happening there. But Herod sends him back without charges, and we continue with Mark's narrative. And we'll look at verses 6 through 15 now. 6 through 15, where we find that there is this question of Jesus or Barabbas. And so let us read the passage now. Now at the feast, Pilate was accustomed to releasing one prisoner to them, whomever they requested. And there was one named Barabbas who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in the rebellion. Then the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he had always done for them. But Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd, so that he should rather release Barabbas to them. Pilate answered and said to them again, "What then do you want me to do with him whom you call the king of the Jews. So they cried out again, crucify him. Then Pilate, excuse me. Then Pilate said to them, why, what evil has he done? But they cried out all the more, crucify him. So Pilate, wanting to gratify the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. So, the question now, Jesus or Barabbas? Mark reveals, Mark reveals here a custom of Pilate that he released a prisoner at the feast, and John reveals that that feast was Passover. We find in John 18, verse 39. Instead of Jesus, however, the people cry for Barabbas to be released. Taking all the accounts, all the gospel accounts that we see about this, Barabbas was a notorious prisoner. One might say infamous. He was a notorious prisoner. He was a rebel. He was a murderer. He was a thief. We find in Matthew 27, verse 16, Luke 23, 19, and John 18, and verse 40. In all those passages, we find different and some agreement characterizations of Barabbas. Of course, they all agree. You know, an addition doesn't mean there's a contradiction. But we find different characterizations of Barabbas in all of these, in several of these accounts. And so that is, you know, we find that he's done all these things. I mean, he can be a rebel, a murderer, and a thief. And he certainly was all of these things. Surely, Pilate thought that this Jesus, who calls himself the King of the Jews, is better than this murderer and this insurrectionist. No, they still call for Barabbas to be released. But we see that the deck is stacked as the chief priests had stirred up the crowd. How easy is it for a crowd to be made to chant something when they might not even realize what they are saying? How easy is it for that to happen? We certainly find that here. We find that in many cases throughout history. How easily we fall into that mob mentality. Perhaps the priests started the chant, and maybe that's one way that it started. Perhaps the priests started the chant. Perhaps they bribed a few key people to get it going. Perhaps they told the people the trumped up charges they had against Jesus as if it were fact that he was a blasphemer. Of course you want a blasphemer to be crucified, or at least to be executed in some way. Perhaps it was all of these, or maybe some combination of the above. It's easy to think that this is the same crowd that greeted Jesus as he came to Jerusalem on the back of a colt just a few days before, earlier that week. Or that these were the same people touched by Jesus and his ministry that we find in especially the teaching that he did in the days between riding in on the colt and this moment. But it doesn't have to be the case, and probably isn't. And what I mean by that is this was the Passover, and there were many more Jews who had descended upon Jerusalem between Sunday and the Passover. Many Jews had descended upon Jerusalem at this time. And many of them, if they'd even heard of Jesus, may have thought that he was just some wannabe Messiah, as many had come before and since. Whatever the case, they cried for his murderer to be, or for this murderer, excuse me, for Barabbas to be released, rather than the Son of God. On a side note, I do have a question for those who are listening, and maybe Sam, if he wants to add anything. On a side note, why do you think Pilate keeps calling Jesus the King of the Jews? It's kind of a peculiar thing for him to say, but especially since he keeps insisting upon saying it to different people. Well, do you have any thoughts there, Sam, about why he was continuing to do this?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. Pilate was no friend of the Sanhedrin. It was probably a perennial thorn in his side, and so by using that term to refer to Jesus, he was kind of poking him in the eye a little bit. It is interesting that one of the Gospels, I forget which one, talks about the fact that since Pilate sent Jesus to Herod, and Herod sent him back, he said they used to be that event made them friends because they used to be enemies. And so this, who's in charge? The Romans were hated occupiers, but they were in charge. And even though there was a king of Judea, right? The notion of the king of the Jews being something much bigger than just who were the current rulers. There's so much going on here. There's political intrigue, there's gamesmanship between them. But, I think really at this point, I don't think Pilate believes it, in the sense that he believes what Jesus is saying, but that it's really more to prod the priest. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps. And we find, of course, that technically at this time there was no king. That Herod Antipas was the tetrarch. Now I know Mark calls him a king, and that's how the people viewed him. But technically, he wasn't the king. So that may be a sticking point. That's a good point there. And it could be a form of mockery that Pilate is engaging in, sort of jabbing that particular saying into the especially the Jewish leaders, the Jewish rulers of this time. Or he could have been trying to make him sound more appealing than the notorious Barabbas, who was a murderer and a thief. And it's amazing. If he was a murderer, you would expect they would. I mean, that's one of the Ten Commandments, isn't it? Not to murder, and yet they are, and so is theft, and so and yet they are wanting him to be spared, whereas Jesus, who did nothing wrong, is on the chopping block, if you will. And maybe he's wanting Jesus to be spared for several reasons. Not only he believes that he's innocent, but especially after his wife urges him to have nothing to do with this innocent man, with this Jesus. All right, so in any event, they cry for this King of the Jews to be crucified. To be crucified. And so we see in the next thing here, crucify him. Crucify him. After they demand that Jesus be crucified, Pilate wants to know why. Why? What evil has he done? We see in verse 14. So frenzied, they provide no response, but an insistence, a further insistence that he be crucified. Such is the logic behind a riotous mob. Certainly, they don't have often they don't have the logic that's needed collectively in order to intelligently answer these kinds of questions. Now, that's not to say the individuals don't have that, but as a collective, often it's difficult that to find that sort of thing. So it was clear he wanted nothing, that Pilate wanted nothing to do with this innocent man's death, As in another account in Matthew 27 and verse 24, he washes his hands of the whole affair. It's not recorded here in Mark, but it is in Matthew. But of course, his job was to keep the peace, which sometimes meant placating the people. And sadly, in this case, it meant executing an innocent man. And he sees that there's no alternative here, at least it seems to be the case, that he can't find any other out without keeping the peace. That's in his mind anyway. He can't find another alternative from getting things out of from things getting out of hand. The typical treatment of one about to be crucified is to be scourged first, and we find that in verse 15. After he had scourged him, he sent him to be crucified. They completely and amazingly, in all the gospel accounts, they completely skip over the brutality of the scourging. And in all the gospel accounts, they just say, and he scourged him, sort of a matter of fact situation. And so while that is true, it is also maybe something that they're familiar with, enough with that they didn't need to have that explained to them, the original readers of these gospel accounts. As one commentator put it, flogging, as it's sometimes called, often preceded crucifixions. The prisoner was stripped and bound to a post or thrown to the ground. The scourge was generally made of leather thongs, often fitted with pieces of bone or lead or with spikes. The beatings varied in severity. Josephus describes incidents in which men were flogged until their bones lay visible. You know, while none of the accounts say exactly how bad the scourging was, two things mentioned later suggest that it was quite severe. I can't say, I know a lot of people say, his bones were laid bare. Well, there's some indication that that's possible, but it doesn't say exactly. But there are some indications that it was a severe scourging, a severe flogging. Later, we find that he needs help carrying the cross. And we also find later that as he's on the cross, he dies quickly. Now, there could be other reasons for that last one, but it could be because of the severe flogging. And we'll get to those particular events in time. In any event, accompanied with the scourging was the mockery. And we'll see that in this next thing here. Let me move my face. Jesus is mocked. Let's go ahead and read verses 16 through 20. Then the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium, and they called together the whole garrison, and they clothed him with purple, and they twisted a crown of thorns, put it on his head, and began to salute him. Hail, King of the Jews! Then they struck him on the head with a reed and spat on him, and bowing the knee, they worshipped him. And when they had mocked him, they took the purple off him, put his own clothes on him, and led him out to crucify him. Can you imagine? Well, he goes into the Praetorium, and I know Sam mentioned a Praetorium last on Wednesday when he was looking at Philippians and how. Of course, he was in Rome. Paul was in Rome at the time, so it's a different kind of situation. It's a different building, but the situation is similar. Where the Praetorium in Rome has a particular purpose. There were Praetorii. I'll just say Praetoriums. There were Praetoriums in other locations as well, and there was one in Jerusalem. It was a location in any Roman province where the Roman emperor or the representative of the emperor would stay while he is in the area. And of course, at this time, that was Pilate. Roman governors typically hated Jerusalem. So they would not spend their time there for the most part. In fact, they built Caesarea on the coast for the governors to live most of the time. But this was the Passover, a special feast day when every able Jewish male was supposed to descend upon Jerusalem. So, of course, the governor had to be there in part to keep the peace. In this photo here, so if you might recall, we looked at this when we considered Herod's palace. Herod's palace is what we see here on the bottom right of this photo, and we see the temple in the background on the far upper right, the temple over there, and we see the courtyard, and on the far end we see the courtyard. The thing closer to us is Herod's palace, and the thing farther away, the building farther away, would be the Praetorium that they had. And so you can see on this particular photo, the Praetorium here is across this large courtyard from Herod's palace, and it's all behind this thick wall. You see this thick wall in between the rest of the city and these particular areas, the Praetorium and the palace. It was here that the soldiers mock and ridicule our Lord. Now, according to some of the, as I was doing some other research, I noticed that some places have it have the scourging and whatnot take place in the Antonia Fortress, which we did talk a little bit about last time. Do I have that on here? I don't think I do. So the Antonia Fortress is, you see the temple in the background on the far right, upper right. The Antonia Fortress is, in fact, I might be able to back up a little bit because it is here. Right here, and so some people still think that the scourging and whatnot took place there, and the mockery took place in this particular place. So that is, again, that's what some people will say. There's a building that specifically is called the Praetorium, and so why not say that, since it says in chapter 15, verse 16, that they went to the Praetorium. That just makes sense to me. It might not make sense to other people. That is strange. That didn't quite work out like I thought it would. Okay, so Jesus is mocked. He goes to the Praetorium. And now we see he is called the King of the Jews while Pilate might be saying this not necessarily as a ridicule to Jesus, but of course the Roman soldiers are not quite so generous. Again, Pilate continued calling Jesus the King of the Jews. The soldiers must have heard that particular thing and decided that it would be a fun game. Of course, fun is in quotation marks. Romans typically did not believe in the sanctity of every human life. So their treatment of some Jew who thinks he's king is not that unusual, unfortunately. It shows the level of depravity that these Roman soldiers will sink to, having called together the whole garrison to watch this. We see there in verse 16, that they called together the whole garrison. Come, let's watch this. Let's mock this this individual about to be crucified. Man, let's have some fun, according to their how they would view this. And it may have been upwards of around 600 soldiers watching this somehow. And so that's awful to consider. Before the mockery occurred, recall that Jesus had just been scourged, a brutal whipping that may have exposed bone. With this in mind, we find that they did five more things to him before they sent him off to be crucified. They clothed him with purple. They twisted a crown of thorns on his head. They saluted him, calling him Hail, King of the Jews, saying that. They hit him and spat on him, and they pretended to worship him. Matthew records one more thing, that they gave him a reed as a scepter in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 29. Interestingly enough, two of the other gospel accounts talk of the robe that Jesus was clothed in, both Matthew and John. John agrees with Mark that it was purple, but Matthew says it was scarlet. So that's an interesting thing to consider. Is it scarlet or is it purple? Well, the Roman soldiers had plenty of red cloth lying around as part of their uniforms, and that may have been what it came from. And it may have faded. It may have been faded enough to have bordered on that, on scarlet and purple. I mean, I have navy blue t-shirts that some thought were purple. After, I don't know if I still have them. I think they're old enough that they have. and in fact, not just navy blue. Some of them were a regular shade of blue. And yet people thought that they were purple because of how faded they had become. This is no different. The scarlet faded enough so that it looked purplish. And so that's what happens here, very likely, to reconcile the two different colors that are mentioned here. Of course, purple is the color of royalty. So it was a fitting mockery, if you think any kind of mockery like this could be fitting. Keep in mind the bloody scourging that Jesus just experienced. His blood was sticking to the fabric as a bandage might stick to the fabric. Then it was later casually ripped off, opening those wounds yet again. As with the crown of thorns, it was a thorny garland that was dug, twisted into his head. They hit him in the head with that crown of thorns, with a reed. So further digging into that, perhaps that same reed or a similar one that they gave him as a scepter, according to Matthew's account. Of course, a scepter is a symbol of authority, and yet it is something else that kings had. They spit on him, not unlike the Jews who spat on him earlier at his trial. We saw in Mark chapter 14 and verse 65. The soldiers then add insult to injury by saluting him and calling him the King of the Jews, just as they would say, Hail Caesar! Little do they know that he is in fact the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Little do they know that while they mockingly bow down and worship him, he is worthy, truly worthy of all the worship in the world as its creator and sustainer and soon to be Savior. We are looking at all these individuals and how they treated Jesus. Judas betrayed him. Peter denied him. The Jewish leaders were envious of him and accused him. And here we see that the soldiers mock him. A couple comments on here that I've missed. Renee says, reading the history of scourging, most people didn't live through it. A lot of people perhaps did not. And so amazingly, Jesus did enough to make it to the cross. Joy said his blood changed color from purple to scarlet. No, not the blood. Of course, blood actually, blood does change from, when blood is dried, it does change from red, scarlet to purple. That's not what happened with this robe. This robe was likely old, tattered, and faded. And so it was originally scarlet. And so Matthew records it as scarlet. and it had faded enough to be purple as Matthew and John record. So that's, again, you don't give a tattered, faded garment to royalty. And so this is further mocking him in that way. So another question on here. Who do you know that is like these soldiers? Putting up fronts, pretending to honor and worship the Lord on Sunday, but who don't pay him a second thought the rest of the week. Are we like that? Are we any better than they? I hope so. I hope that we are better than that. But how many people aren't? I mean, they put up a good front. Obviously, they're mocking him. But remember one thing. How many times does the Bible say God will not be mocked? You might try to mock him, but what ends up happening anyway? Punishment occurs. Punishment will happen. You may try to mock him. You may end up mocking him by pretending, by feigning worship on Sunday. But the rest of the week, if you're not acting as a Christian in any way, then there's a problem. You're mocking God, and that needs to happen. That you need to be able to repent. All right. So the last thing on here, leading Jesus out. Leading Jesus out. We find that in verse 20. Before the soldiers remove the purple cloth, John records a few more things that happened. John chapter 19, verses 4 through 9. We'll actually, I think I wanted to read that. John 19, verses 4 through 9. More things happen. It goes past verse 9, but I wanted to focus on this section here. John 19, because it's pertinent to Mark later on. John 19, verses 4 through 9. Pilate went out again and said to them, behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, behold the man. Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate said to them, you take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the praetorium, and said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. I want to mention a couple of these things, some of the things that were mentioned here in John 9, because they will play into what happens later, particularly in Mark 15 and verse 39, where we see that this centurion says, truly, this man was the Son of God. He makes this great confession. He makes this great confession here. And all right, and so Pilate parades the beaten and bloodied Jesus in front of the people, reminding them that he finds no fault in him. And he says, behold the man. The chief priests and officers continue to cry out, crucify him. Pilate basically says that he doesn't want to, that they should do it instead themselves. Then we see the key phrase that I want to focus on here in John 19. The Jews informed Pilate and the officers around him that he made himself the Son of God. And what was Pilate's reaction? In verse 8, he was the more afraid. So we're out of time, and I really want to get to this. Tell you what, we'll get to this next question. Why do you suppose Pilate was afraid of this accusation? And we'll get to that next time. I will address some of the comments here before we finish that. Man, I really wanted to get to that because it was really good. But we'll get to that next time. Carol said, "Blood is purple until the air hits it, and then it turns red." That is actually a common misconception. Blood is always red. And so that's a thing there. And the meat market is called Blooming. I worked in the market for several years. Oh, well, I mean, from my understanding, red blood is always red. And so I don't know about the meat market, but I do know that that for us, it's it sometimes people think that it's blue, but it's not. And so is that scarlet kind of looks purplish a little bit sometimes, depending on the light, depending on the situation. So, and blood-soaked fabric looks scarlet. Well, I never said it was blood-soaked; it just had blood on it. And so there's that as well. Sam, what thoughts do you have before we close out, and anything you want to address with the comments that are here?
Well, he probably wasn't bleeding enough to completely stain a garment. These were wool; they would have been thick. But I think those are very minor details in the larger story. I think, and you're about to cover. I'll let it go next week. But the interchange that they have with Pilate, that the high priests have with Pilate, right here at this point, that you're going to cover next week, I think is so powerful. And when you just think of everything that's going on in these few minutes, this is all taking place in just a few hours from the time he's taken in the garden till the time he's crucified. That's the reason why I think we have four gospels, is it gives us all the different dimensions of what was going on.
All right, great, great. Yeah, I really do want to get into that. It's only a few more points, but we are way over time now, so I don't want to cut into to sermon the worship service time. All right, so we all need a break. So thank you all so much for joining us for for this Bible class. We'll continue in our worship in a little bit. Join us in our live stream for that in just a few minutes at 10:30. So welcome. We'll close out this live stream, and we'll have another live stream in just a moment. So we'll see you then. God bless you. See you in a minute.